Students for Fair Admissions versus President and Fellows of Harvard College on writ of certiorari to the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit, and Students for Fair Admissions versus University of North Carolina et al. Supreme Court of the United States, June 29, 2023. Narrative summary of opinion of the court, delivered by Chief Justice John Roberts, produced by Cerebell Legal Intelligence. In these cases, the court considered whether the admissions systems used by Harvard College and the University of North Carolina, two of the oldest institutions of higher learning in the United States, are lawful under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Harvard College, founded in 1636, has a highly selective application process. In the last year, over 60,000 hopefuls applied with fewer than 2,000 admitted. Acceptance factors range from grades, recommendation letters to overcoming adversity, and may take into account an applicant's race, TOR. The multi-step admissions process at Harvard starts with an application screening by a first reader who assigns scores to six areas, namely academic, extracurricular, athletic, school support, personal, and overall. A one is the best possible score, and six the worst. The first readers may also consider an applicant's race in the process. Subsequently, admissions subcommittees with region-wise representation evaluate the applicants in a 3 to 5 day meeting and present their recommendations to the full admissions committee, considering the race of applicants. The full committee of 40 members dives into the list of applicants recommended by the subcommittees. In the initial discussion, applicants' racial breakdown is laid out with the aim of avoiding a major drop-off in minority admissions as per Harvard's Director of Admissions. Each candidate is discussed individually with a required majority of votes for tentative acceptance. Afterward, the racial composition of the tentatively accepted students' batch is revealed to the committee, 980F App. The final stage involves trimming the list of tentatively admitted students. The ones considered for withdrawal at this point are put on a LOP list, which includes four details: legacy status, recruited athlete status, financial aid eligibility, and race. In the LOP process, the race factor comes into play, 980FF SUP, Mass. In Harvard's process, race is determinative tip for a considerable proportion of all admitted African American and Hispanic applicants, EBID. The University of North Carolina, UNC, established shortly following the ratification of the Constitution, is known as the first public university of the U.S. It is highly selective like Harvard, attracting nearly 43,500 applications for its freshman class of 4,200 per year. The first review of each application is conducted by one of roughly 40 admissions office readers. Each reader gets around 5 applications per hour. These readers factor in race and ethnicity alongside several other criteria, such as academic performance, standardized testing results, extracurricular activities, essay quality, personal factors, and student background. Admissions decisions are mainly provisional, shaped by numerical ratings given for academics, extracurriculars, personal qualities, and essays. During the period of litigation, underrepresented minority students were more likely to score higher on personal ratings than white and Asian American peers, but were often rated lower on their academics, extracurricular activities, and essays. A reader's recommendation on a student's admission involves a justifiable comment and may include racial plus factors significant to the individual case. The admissions decision then moves on to the school group review stage, where experienced staff members review every initial decision by the readers. They receive a comprehensive report on each student, encompassing class rank, GPA, test scores, ratings from initial readers, and their status, residence, legacies, or special recruits, and either approve or reject each admission recommendation. The final decision may also take into account the applicant's race. See, established in 2014, the petitioner, the nonprofit Students for Fair Admissions, SFFA, exists to defend equal protection under law. SFFA sued Harvard College and the University of North Carolina in 2014, alleging their race-based admissions violated Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, respectively. Following bench trials in both cases, the district courts determined their programs were in line with race usage precedents in college admissions after a 15-day trial. Harvard, with 30 witnesses, and an 8-day trial, UNC. The First Circuit affirmed Harvard's legal process. Certiorari was granted for the Harvard case and certiorari before judgment for the UNC case. FF Supp. Before examining the merits, we must assure ourselves of our jurisdiction, as asserted by Summers v. Earth Island Institute. UNC contends that SFFA lacks standing, as it's not a genuine membership organization. However, this argument has been consistently rejected, and we do likewise. Article 3 of the Constitution restricts judicial power to real disputes. To establish a case under this article, a plaintiff needs to demonstrate injury, causation, and potential redress through a favorable decision. In instances where the plaintiff is an organization like SFFA, the requirements of Article 3 can be met if the organization claims injury or represents standing for its members. To achieve representational standing, the organization must show members could sue in their own right. The interests it seeks to protect are aligned to its mission, and the claim doesn't necessitate individual members' participation. It's undisputed that SFFA meets this three-part test. The respondents contend that SFFA wasn't a genuine membership organization when it filed the suit, and ergo couldn't invoke representational standing. According to the respondents, our decision in Hunt suggests that organizations can only qualify if controlled and funded by their members. As SFA's members did neither at the litigation's commencement, respondents argue SFFA couldn't represent its members for Article 3 standing. Nevertheless, the Hunt decision doesn't apply here. Unlike the state agency discussed in that case, SFFA is indisputably a voluntary membership organization with identifiable members. At the time of filing the suit, it was a valid nonprofit with 47 members supporting its mission. In the UNC litigation, SFFA represented 4 members specifically, those denied admission into UNC. These members have committed to SFFA, support its mission, receive case updates, and have had the chance to guide SFFA's case. Where an organization has identifiable members and represents them genuinely, no further scrutiny into its operations is needed. Since SFFA meets the standing prerequisites demanded of organizational plaintiffs in Hunt, its obligations under Article 3 are fulfilled. Following the Civil War, the 14th Amendment was passed, prohibiting state laws that denied equal protection to any citizen. This clause was seen as foundational, promoting absolute equality of all citizens without basing distinctions on race or color. This amendment was originally embraced by the Supreme Court, stating that all individuals, regardless of race, should have equal standing before state laws. However, this commitment to the Equal Protection Clause was not upheld over time. State-sanctioned segregation became a norm, with the court even advocating a separate but equal regime in Plessy v. Ferguson. It took over a half century in Brown v. Board of Education for the Supreme Court to finally reject segregation and upend the doctrine of separate but equal. The court established that public education must be available on equal terms to everyone, eliminating the use of race as a factor in public education. The same principles extended to other aspects of life, such as the invalidation of racially segregated public facilities and spaces. The court's decisions aimed to uphold the 14th Amendment's purpose to eliminate racial discrimination. Any exceptions to equal protection had to survive a strict examination, known as strict scrutiny, demanding compelling governmental interests and necessity, a narrowly tailored use of race. Only remediating specific past discrimination and immediate risks to human safety have been accepted as valid reasons for race-based actions. The Supreme Court emphasizes any racial distinctions in law are contrary to the principle of equality the nation is founded upon, and should only be used in exceptional cases. The cases question if a university's admissions decisions can be based on an applicant's race. The first case, Regents of University of California, Bakke, was about a quota system at the University of California, Davis Medical School. The school reserved 16 of its 100 seats for certain minority groups. However, Alan Bakke, despite having higher grades and MCAT scores than some admitted minority applicants, was refused admission 2 times. Bakke then sued, claiming the quota system was a breach of the Equal Protection Clause. In a split decision, the court partially sided with both Bakke and the school. Justice Powell, while supported by no others on the court, created a prevailing opinion which now serves as the basis for constitutional analysis of race-conscious admission policies. He argued that three of the four justifications the school provided were not compelling enough. However, he sided with the school's interest in achieving the educational benefits of a diverse student body, stating universities have academic freedom rights to decide their own admissions. Justice Powell expressed that certain practices were not permissible, though. He explained that because of our constitutional and demographic history, any racial and ethnic classifications were inherently suspect and were subject to scrutiny. Universities couldn't use a quota system where a certain number of seats are reserved for a specific ethnic group, for instance. They also couldn't completely discount a person's application on the basis of race. Race, according to Justice Powell, could only be employed as a plus factor in an applicant's file. This means that it must be weighed flexibly against all other elements of diversity, considering the uniqueness of each applicant, a concept that he modeled off Harvard College's admission system at the time. However, there was no consensus among the other court members. Four justices believed the government can use race to rectify the effects of past societal discrimination, while four others argued the program contravened principles embedded in the Constitution and morality of the time, the prohibition against racial discrimination. Following the confusion around our divided Bakke decision, we sought to clarify whether Justice Powell's perspective was indeed binding precedent. The matter reemerged in Grutter v. Bollinger, 2003, which examined University of Michigan Law School's use of race in admissions. The court, in another divided decision, agreed with Justice Powell that student body diversity is a legitimate interest that can necessitate race consideration in admissions. Borrowing from Justice Powell's analysis extensively, the court ruled that while the law school's belief in the necessity of diversity is respected, it still had to observe certain restrictions in achieving that goal, mirroring Powell's position. Foremost, it couldn't set racial quotas or create separate admissions tracks for certain racial groups or shield certain racial or ethnic applicants from competition. The intent to fill a certain percentage based solely on race or ethnicity was also disallowed. Such constraints were meant to ward off two risks inherent to race-based action: the risk of illegal stereotyping and using race as a discriminator rather than a supplement. The use of race, hence, couldn't unduly harm non-minority applicants. Yet, despite these safeguards, Grutter expressed unease with race-based admissions, warning that racial classifications, regardless of their purpose, can be perilous. The court underlined that all race-based action should aim to minimize harm and under ongoing scrutiny. Attempting to regulate these worries, Grutter decreed that race-based admission systems must eventually end. Grutter stressed that these programs should have a reasonable lifespan and must end voluntarily. Insisting on the end of such systems was a compromise made with the Constitution's equal protection promise. Any permanent justification for racial preferences would violate the principle of equal protection. Thus, Grutter concluded with an expectation that in another 25 years, the use of racial biases wouldn't be necessary for achieving the diversity. Two decades on, Harvard and UNC's race-based admissions continue indefinitely. They argue their necessity, yet the boundaries set for such practices are overstepped. Universities must employ strict scrutiny, refrain from negative stereotyping via race, and eventually cease these practices. However, the respondents' admission systems, despite good intentions, are in violation of these principles. Consequently, in accordance with the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, they must be invalidated. The court ruled that race-based admissions programs must be run in a way to allow judicial review, citing past court cases, Edmondson, Leesville Concrete Co., U.S. Fisher v. University of Texas, Austin, 579 U.S. Fisher 2. Both Harvard and UNC declared certain educational benefits as a result of their race-based admissions, but these were seen as not measurable or coherent enough for strict scrutiny. These vague goals do not have an understandable standard, rendering them impractical for judicial scrutiny. The court pointed out lack of clarity in how court is to measure these goals, citing previous cases like Johnson, 543 U.S., Franks v. Bowman Transco, U.S. Dayton beat Ed, Brinkman, 433 U.S., the argument being, if quantifiable standards can be applied in other contexts, why not here? Moreover, universities' division of students into racial categories was seen as unclear and even potentially counterproductive to their aims. For example, grouping all Asian students together potentially ignores the lack of representation for different Asian subgroups, prompting Justice Roberts to cite a Pew Research Center report on the fluid nature of Hispanic or Latino identity in the U.S. The use of these broad racial categories was thus seen as undermining rather than promoting the university's goals of diversity. Finally, while universities may claim their expertise on the matter and ask for deference, the court insisted that this does not mean abandoning judicial review. These race-based programs were seen as lacking the most exact connection between justification and classification, a standard cited from Gratz v. Bollinger, 539 U.S. Therefore, the programs were not accepted as they stand. The race-based admission systems employed by respondents fail to adhere to the Equal Protection Clause's requirement that race must not be used as a negative, nor as a stereotype. Evidence indicates that the consideration of race in Harvard's admission system led to an 11. Asian American admissions and fewer admittance of Asian American and white students overall. Respondents claim that each applicant's race is never regarded as a negative in their systems, cannot hold up under scrutiny. While Harvard argues that preference given to certain characteristics in applicants does not translate into a negative for those who lack them, such an argument falls short when considered in a zero-sum context, such as college admissions. The respondents claim that race only impacts a small portion of admissions decisions contradicts their assertion that removal of race-based admissions would significantly alter the demographic makeup of their student body. If absence of consideration of race would result in higher admissions rates for certain racial groups, then race has indeed been used as a negative. Equal protection under law does not sanction the unequal imposition of such inequalities. Additionally, respondents' programs endorse unlawful racial stereotype through their premise that race inherently adds value. This contradicts our long-standing prohibition against the assumption that individuals of the same race share identical viewpoints or characteristics. Yet, both Harvard and University of North Carolina's admission processes are predicated on the erroneous stereotype that certain racial backgrounds inherently bring unique insights others cannot offer. This court firmly rejects the government favoring individuals merely based on their race. The Equal Protection Clause is predicated on the principle that individuals should not be treated differently solely based on their skin color. It's demeaning to judge a person by their ancestry rather than their merits or qualities. By admitting students based on race, universities mistakenly assume that individuals of a particular race think alike. And this in turn propagates harmful stereotypes that scrutinize individuals as the product of their race, which goes against the core constitutional principle of equality before the law and causes continued hurt and injury. Respondents: admissions programs lack a logical endpoint, failing to offer a clear metric to evaluate meaningful representation and diversity without strict numerical benchmarks. Harvard and UNC's admissions programs rely largely on racial balancing, which we've established to be unconstitutional as it negates the individuality of citizens. They aim for a rough racial percentage, ensuring race will always be a factor. Respondents argue the need for race-based admissions will end when diversity benefits are evidently achieved, but this is challenging to measure, as confirmed by UNC. Respondents also propose their race-based preferences extend for a minimum of another 5 years, referring to a statement in Grutter. This is the court's viewpoint that by 2028, these preferences would no longer be needed. Yet there is skepticism that Harvard and UNC will eliminate these admission criteria within this time frame due to their consideration of racial criteria possibly extending beyond the suggested timeline. Respondents argue their program's continual review justifies their indefinite continuation. However, periodic review doesn't justify unconstitutionality, and programs have to inevitably terminate. Harvard admits its program has no endpoint, and its mindset towards racial considerations remains unchanged, nearly half a century old. Similarly, UNC hasn't set an expiry date for its program, suggesting a potential increase in its race dependency. This suggests no immediate compliance with the Equal Protection Clause from respondents. The dissenting opinions aim to uphold the respondents' admissions programs based on their belief that the 14th Amendment allows state entities to rectify societal discrimination through overtly race-related actions. However, this court has consistently refuted such propositions. The dissenters' interpretation of the Equal Protection Clause is not novel. In Bakke, Justice Powell rejected the idea that societal discrimination can justify race-related admissions programs, a view later adopted by the court. Subsequent rulings continuously found that combating societal discrimination doesn't justify race-based state action. The dissenting justices overlook these facts. They neglect to cite past judgments and disregard case legal precedent. Their reliance on a dissenting view in Bakke fails to support their argument. The dissent's desired interpretation contravenes the spirit and letter of the Equal Protection Clause's central principle of equality. They also misconstrue precedents on race-based admissions. The dissenting opinion incorrectly suggests that Grutter sanctions such programs indefinitely. Yet, Grutter stressed that they are temporary. The principal dissent erred too in its dependence on Fisher II, which actually underlined the constitutional issues around race-based admission systems and didn't claim universal applicability. The dissenting justices selectively interpret case law, overlook stringent requirements of the Equal Protection Clause, and neglect demands for race-based admissions programs to end. They propose a judiciary that discriminates based on skin color, which is inherently unequal. Ignoring the equality emphasized by both the Constitution and Justice Harlan, their position is mistaken. The Harvard and UNC admissions programs conflict with the Equal Protection Clause, lacking clear, measurable goals justifying racial consideration, employing negative racial biases, utilizing stereotypes, and lacking real end goals. We've never allowed such methods and refuse to today. However, universities are not prohibited from considering a student's account of how race affected them through discrimination, inspiration, or otherwise. Yet, universities can't simply establish the unlawful race-based regime through application essays or other means. What one can't do directly, one can't do indirectly. The Constitution tackles substance, not shadows, and the prohibition on racial discrimination is aimed at the act, not the name, as established in Cummings v. Missouri, 1867. A student's achievement overcoming racial discrimination, for example, must be attributed to their resilience and tenacity. A student's achievement tied to their heritage must be credited to their unique contribution to the university. The student's individual experiences must be the basis, not their race. Many institutions have wrongly assumed racial identity as the deciding factor of an individual's identity. The Constitution deems such choice intolerable. Consequently, the judgments of the Court of Appeals for the First Circuit and the District Court for the Middle District of North Carolina are reversed. It is so ordered. This audio summary produced and sponsored by Ceribell Legal Intelligence. Amplify your legal genius with Ceribell's generative AI case file summarization and analysis services at cerebel.law.